KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host, on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Jonathan Bloom, a freelance journalist and food waste expert who writes the blog Wasted Food. His work has appeared in a variety of publications, including the New York Times, Washington Post, Boston Globe, and Newsweek. Jonathan Bloom is here today to tell us about his newly published book, American Wasteland: How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
What led you to write American Wasteland?
Well, I started to learn a bit about just how much food isn't eaten in this country and the effects of all that waste. And after I learned about that, I really set out to try to raise awareness on the topic. And so I, instead of going into more of a traditional journalism job, I decided to try to make this book a reality.
By your definition, what qualifies as wasted food?
That's a great question. So in the research that I do, there's often something called loss. And loss is something that happens more due to weather or some sort of problem with the crops. Waste connotes a certain culpability. So somewhere along the line, someone decided that this food wasn't going to be eaten, or to not harvest it, or to not cook it. So it really runs the gamut. There's a variety of locations and reasons why food is wasted, but it's that decision to not consume something.
In the U.S., what fraction of the food that we produce is wasted?
Well, the best estimate we have is that 40% of all the food produced in this country isn't consumed. And the most recent figure comes from an NIH study. But some people suggest that as much as 50% isn't eaten.
Now, would you elaborate on why wasted food is a problem? What are the environmental, economic, and ethical implications of our wasted food?
Sure. Well, starting with the economics, it's fairly simple. Using about a dollar for a pound of food, there's $150 billion that's lost through food waste. So certainly money that could be better used elsewhere. The ethical argument is a bit trickier. The simplified answer is, to me, it's morally callous to throw away food and to not eat food that we could use when so many people don't have enough to eat. And from an environmental perspective, there are a tremendous amount of resources that go into growing our food. And then when we turn around and throw it away or don't make the effort to eat what we have in our fridge, or whether it's a restaurant that's serving too much food or a supermarket that's culling for superficial reasons, then what happens is all those resources, mostly oil and water, that go into growing our food, even transporting it and keeping it cold, all those resources go for naught. So there was a recent study that estimated that about 2% of all U.S. energy consumption goes to creating food that is ultimately wasted. And to me, that's just sad. And to be perfectly honest, that's a conservative estimate. So it's probably a bit higher than that.
You also mentioned in your book the problem of methane emitted from landfills when the wasted food finds its way to the landfills. Would you comment on how large a problem that is in contributing to climate change?
Yeah, well, methane is the other reason why it matters environmentally. So when that food decomposes anaerobically, when it does so without air, it creates methane, and that's a greenhouse gas that's about 23 times as potent a heat trapper as CO2 over 100 years. So it's basically creating climate change from our kitchens.
How much methane is emitted from landfills?
Well, landfills are the second leading producers of methane for human-related causes. Livestock would be the number one source. And in the landfill, food is responsible for the most methane out of any product. So when we throw that food away, we're aiding this problem. And not to say that that's the largest environmental problem we face today, but from what I've seen, it's the problem that is easiest to solve. It wouldn't really take all that much doing for us to trim our food waste in half.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but would you give us an overview of where food waste takes place in the process of going from farm to fork?
Certainly. Well, food waste really happens throughout the food chain, starting on the farm level, where with some crops, entire fields aren't harvested. That's often because the price for a certain crop has gone down. It doesn't justify harvesting it. Sometimes things aren't picked when they're hand harvested. Sometimes things aren't picked for superficial reasons. They don't look quite right, or maybe it's the wrong shape or size. So there's a tremendous amount of food that doesn't make it off the farm. Then when you get to the supermarket level, that same superficiality is stepped up a notch. And for all of you people out there listening, I'm sure you can think about that produce department. When you walk into the supermarket, there just isn't much that doesn't look perfect. And that happens, number one, from this consistent culling in the stores, but also from a winnowing process that happens throughout the chain from farms on through wholesalers and up through the stores' major distribution centers. And then at restaurants as well, we see a tremendous amount of waste. Some of it's within the kitchen, not cooking everything that they get. More of it is from our plates, and that leads into a discussion of portion sizes. But just to continue on this journey, so after restaurants, the place where we see the most amount of waste is in homes. And actually, there's a study that suggests that households are responsible for the most waste out of any portion of the food chain. So when I saw that, that kind of blew my mind. That was really surprising. But there was a study from a county in New York that said households created 40% of that county's food waste. So the good news from that, if there is any, is that people like you and me have a real role to play in reducing the amount of waste.
Would you elaborate on how the waste takes place in people's homes? I think we have a sense of how some of that takes place, but go into detail.
Yeah, sure. Well, oh gosh, there's so many reasons why we're not as resourceful with our food as we could be. I mean, from a motivational standpoint, food is fairly cheap, and we don't tend to value things that are inexpensive. Now, I know some people out there might be listening and thinking that they've seen their food costs rise in the last couple of years, and prices are increasing for sure. But when you look at the cost of food as a relation to our income, we're spending about 10% of our disposable income on food, and that's at an all-time low. And not only that, but there's no other nation in the world that spends as little on food. So it is fairly cheap. It's an artificial cheapness, which gets into another discussion about subsidies on food. But regardless, that is responsible for a fair amount of the motivation for not necessarily using as much as we could. And then practically, I mean, why things don't get eaten. I think we often buy too much food. We end up with all this stuff in the refrigerator. And with today's refrigerators being fairly large, it's almost impossible to use it all up before it goes bad.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jonathan Bloom, author of the book American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you go into more detail on the ways that food is wasted at grocery stores?
Yeah, sure. Well, I had a front row view of grocery store food waste. I actually worked in a produce department for a couple of months, and actually more than a front row view, I was actually doing some of the wasting, unfortunately. My first day of work, the first thing I did was pull all these bagged salads off the shelf, and there were things with the sell-by date of that day. So the store's not going to sell them, but at the same time, they're perfectly edible. So expiration dates on bags of food or even canned goods, shelf-stable goods, anything that has a date on it, there's going to be a fair amount of caution built into that. And what happens is these dates, when we see them, we're not entirely sure what to do with them. There's a tremendous amount of confusion. So a lot of people end up throwing it out. So stores are wasting food for that reason, but also because there's this cult of perfection, as I call it, and supermarkets don't want to give any kind of image that they have food that isn't just immaculately fresh. So I've spoken with supermarket executives about possibly having a discount produce rack, and the store exec that I talked to said that He didn't want to have any kind of image in people's heads about produce being, you know, just a slightly bit off. So they'd rather just throw it out and not get any revenue from it.
Looking now at solutions, what do you think is a realistic goal for cutting down food waste in the U.S.?
Well, I think we could probably trim a quarter of that waste without breaking a sweat. And if we did that, we would go a long way toward reducing hunger, as long as we could figure out the distribution question. So I think that's a reasonable goal. I don't think it would be terribly difficult to trim our waste in half, but I think starting with more of a reachable goal is the way to go here.
Well, you just pointed out that we have food waste, but also hungry people. How can we convert wasted food into food for the hungry? How feasible is this, and what are the challenges?
Well, as I mentioned, distribution is the major challenge. There are a number of food recovery groups that are addressing the problem now of redistributing food, but it's tremendously labor-intensive and doesn't necessarily make the most sense. We're having to have these vans and mini trucks zip all over town to recover food. If we could avoid that in the first place, if we could avoid having so much excess, that would probably be a better plan. But that's often difficult to pull off. There's one group in the UK that's actually called upon the food industry to do the transportation of this excess, and that's actually something that might be a decent idea here. They're already traveling these routes, so enlisting them to help would certainly be a plus. But in the bigger picture, I think having someone on the federal level get involved would certainly be a big boost to food recovery. And there was such a person in the late 90s, but that position wasn't renewed after the Clinton administration left office. So I'd love to see one person, or maybe more, but at least one person on the federal payroll whose job it is to think about these issues and get farmers to harvest crops that they would otherwise plow under, and then try and figure out the distribution question.
Well, you've alluded to this, but from a public policy perspective, what steps at the federal level have been taken to address food waste?
Well, there haven't been many steps recently, and I'm hoping to kickstart that process a little bit. Again, looking at Britain, where they're just much more in tune to food waste, the Secretary of State for the Environment, which is basically like a cabinet position here, the gentleman I met with, Hillary Benn, he's actually no longer in power as the Labour lost the recent election, but he was very interested in this issue and essentially got a good number of people in the UK interested as well. And they're funding research, they're spreading the word through a couple different websites in England and Scotland, and then people are definitely catching on. So from a legislative perspective, I'd love to see a little bit more support for farmers who do give, making it easier for them to donate, but also to get tax benefits from that donation. And also having something about food recovery written into the farm bill would certainly help. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier, having someone in the federal apparatus whose job it is to think about these issues, whether we call it the food waste czar or, you know, the National Food Recovery Coordinator, I'm pretty flexible on the name, but there needs to be someone thinking about these issues.
Would you speak about some of the innovative steps being taken by nonprofits and individuals in the U.S. to address the issue of food waste?
Sure. Well, the food recovery groups that I talk about a fair amount, and they're really the foot soldiers here, reducing waste at the ground level. And it's a tremendous amount of work. So places like D.C. Central Kitchen and City Harvest, those are two of the founding groups there. But then there are also these gleaning operations and people who go out to farms and pick crops that would otherwise be plowed under. I've had the pleasure of going out with some of these groups, and it's difficult work, but it's also fun. You get out there into the fields a bit and get your hands dirty and get some exercise and do some good. So there are certainly people who are out there promoting the cause of food recovery, and I would definitely recommend if people out there get a chance to go gleaning to take the chance. And finally, there's an interesting site that I'd highlight called Ample Harvest, and it's basically a way for backyard gardeners to donate their abundance, a way for them to find food banks that are located near them. You can just type in your location and it'll bring them up. And it's really neat because oftentimes the foods that are hardest for shelters and food banks to get are those fresh fruits and vegetables. So here's a way to get those healthy foods to those in need.
Would you speak about scrounging as a way of lessening food waste?
Sure. Scrounging is a fun topic for me. I had the chance to go to Reed College and take part. And for those who don't know, it's basically a group of students who decide that they're not going to buy a meal plan, but instead are going to subsist on the leftovers of their fellow students. And it's really ingrained. It's a cultural thing at Reed, and it's fairly doable. The other students kind of help them to make it happen, and there's a table or two where the scroungers all hang out, and it's actually a really communal, interesting experience. It's not a solution in any way. It's not something that's going to take off outside of college campuses, but I think that the really interesting part of scrounging is that it illustrates just how squeamish we are with sharing food and also just how much excess there is in the traditional cafeteria setting or even at a restaurant.
Would you speak also about the use of food waste for energy production?
So when we do have food waste, and there is going to always be some food waste, we're never going to completely eliminate it. We really want to keep it out of the landfill for those environmental reasons we talked about. And that would point us toward either composting or creating energy from it. And I would put anaerobic digestion, creating energy, like waste-to-energy schemes, I would put that above composting, and the EPA does as well. So the idea there is to have an in-vessel digester, essentially, where we're digesting the food and capturing the methane that is created, and then we're using that either to turn it into a liquefied natural gas or to run a generator and create electricity. Basically, just energy from waste. It's a fairly simple process, and I know that they're going to be opening a facility in Vancouver pretty soon that is doing that. So it's a little bit capital intensive up front, but I don't think it's out of the question, and I think it's the kind of thing that more and more municipalities will start to look into as they see the benefit in terms of energy creation, but also reducing the amount of stuff that they have to send to landfill and pay for in that way.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jonathan Bloom, author of the book American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. What are some of the best steps that individuals can take to help reduce food waste, since that's one of the key places that food is wasted?
Yeah. As I mentioned, we all have a role to play here in reducing the amount of food that's wasted, and we can really just control what happens in our household. So primarily, I would say people should be smarter shoppers and not buy your way into waste. So the best way that I've found to do that is to plan out meals and then make a detailed shopping list. That way you don't end up buying too much. But that's more if you're the kind of person who likes to go shopping once a week. For folks who don't mind going food shopping or more European in approach, if you're going to go more often, that's fine as well. You need to find the approach that works best for you. But the important thing is not ending up with too much food. Then once you are serving food, trying to be wise about portion size will definitely help reduce waste. And the thing with portions is that we've gotten a bit confused about what a normal size portion looks like. And I point most of the blame at restaurants for slopping these massive portions down in front of us. And finally, making friends with leftovers. When we do have that excess food, not just throwing it away, but saving it. And there's nothing good about saving leftovers and not eating them, so that's the second part here. So you have to save and then eat leftovers. And I've found that some people are not necessarily leftover lovers. And if that's the case, then maybe just try to adjust your behavior a bit and not cook as much. You can have a recipe or if you're out to eat at a restaurant, maybe sharing an entree or otherwise trying to avoid that excess.
Overall, in your view, what are the best or most effective solutions to food waste we can currently take?
Well, the solutions that I just talked about are probably the best way that we're going to have an impact in our lives. I'll give a couple others, too. Talking about expiration dates, that's something that comes up a lot with folks, and not necessarily just treating expiration dates as the law, but looking at them with a little bit of skepticism. There's a fair amount of caution that's built into those expiration dates. So as I'm sure many people out there know, it's not like the food immediately goes bad once the clock strikes midnight on the day that's marked on the thing of milk or whatever it may be. So trusting your senses will definitely help reduce waste. But ultimately, I think just being aware of the idea of food waste in your own life and kind of being open to noticing it, I think that will go a long way. And I found it's the kind of topic that once you start thinking about it, you can't help but see it everywhere.
Would you elaborate a bit more on some of the attempts to reduce food waste from grocery stores and which are likely to be the most effective there?
Yeah, there are a tremendous amount of grocery stores that do donate some of their edible but unsellable foods. And those are things like the bags of produce that have a sell-by date of that day or maybe right at the date. And, you know, they can't sell it, but it's totally fine to eat at that point. Or maybe things that are a bit blemished, but otherwise fine. So as I was saying, a lot of stores do donate, but it's a question of what kinds of foods they donate. So everyone gives away old bread because they're really not worried about liability, but few stores give meats and proteins or fresh fruits and vegetables. So they're a little concerned. But there is a federal law, the Good Samaritan Act, which protects them from liability as long as they donate food that in good faith they claim is healthy. So I think some stores know about that and then choose to not give anyway just because they don't want to bother. But I think that's primarily the main way that stores can make an impact here. And then secondary would be to maybe loosen up some of the really stringent guidelines they have for what they keep and what they cull. So if you're in a produce department and you follow the produce guy around, next time you're in a store, see if he's going through the stacks of apples and veggies and just sort of keep an eye on what he takes off and what he doesn't. I find that when I look into that box of cold produce, I'm often so surprised at what's in there.
Would you comment on the relative role of individual choice versus public policy in being able to address food waste and the importance of each?
Sure. Well, there's, I believe, right there in Seattle, there's the question of mandatory composting. And many people would say that that's big government and that they shouldn't be told what to do. I guess I'd say I'm in favor of having people compost, making it mandatory, just because the participation rates when it's not mandatory are so abysmal. You look across the U.S., 97% of food is thrown out in the landfill, 97% of food waste. So another way of saying that is that 3% of food is recycled or composted. So I think it's an issue that would warrant some government involvement, but at the same time, I do think if people took the initiative on their own, that they'll be able to make great strides in their own houses.
Why do you think we haven't paid more attention to the issue of food waste in the U.S.?
That's a great question. I think primarily it's because it goes away. It's not like the pile of newspapers that we accumulate throughout the week. When you throw food out, it's gone. A lot of times people have the disposal in the sink and it literally just goes away. If you're throwing it in the trash, you might notice a little smell associated with it. But other than that, I mean, you really just don't notice it. And there aren't too many consequences for creating trash in this country. It's not like we pay by the pound. So for the most part, I don't think it's a problem for people. And they don't necessarily notice it because they don't have to.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
Well, primarily, I hope the book gets people talking about the issue of food waste. And secondary would be that they see that it's a problem and then set out to make some changes in their lives. And I'm not really asking people to do anything radical. It's nothing that is new, certainly. And a lot of the behavioral changes are the kinds of things that 50 years ago people wouldn't dream of not doing. So just being aware of waste, and I think you will naturally become more resourceful and a bit more frugal, and it's kind of a common sense thing. I look at it as why wouldn't you want to eat all the food that you buy? Why wouldn't you want to save money and save the planet in your own little way?
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I guess I would leave people with the thought that we have a role to play here. It's not that difficult to make these behavioral changes in your lives. And I think if everyone took that little bit of action, we'd make significant strides. And think about where recycling was 20 or 30 years ago. It was just this extreme behavior. And these days, the majority of Americans can recycle at their curbside. So we can get there.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Jonathan.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You have just been listening to Jonathan Bloom, author of the book American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It, published in 2010 by DeCapo Press. For more information, check on the web at www.wastedfood.com. Again, that's www.wastedfood.com. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.